The following message was recorded at the 2011 No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. And now, our featured presentation.
For the guys who had their Bibles, I wanted them to read Matthew 25, 14 through 29. Basically, it talks about a parable that about loan money. It also talks about some other things, too. But I told the people in the front to get picked on. So I'm going to ask Neil for me to tell me what he thought about the verse, what it spoke to him.
Feel guilty.
Why did you feel guilty?
Because, you know, the Lord blesses you with so much. You know, do anything with it or use it in the correct way, taken away from you, you're not looked favor upon by God.
Okay. Basically, the parable talked about three different individuals, three servants. One who received five bags of gold. He doubled that as far as investment for his, let's just say, his master or the person that he's working for. Another one who received two bags of gold. He invested that. Double that. This third person got one bag of gold, and basically all he did was dig a hole and put it in there and did not make any type of investment. So what I want to get as far as you guys are concerned, that investment is very important. It's biblical. Another thing that, you know, I had someone tell me that investing is like gambling, but we'll talk about that later. But I'm going to switch gears a little bit. If you guys have any questions or if you need any additional information, this is my contact information, my email address, and my cell phone number. So if you want to write that down, I'll give you a chance to do that right now. I know. It's not working either.
Oh, boy. Robert. Yeah. That's the plans of my segment.
Exactly. Okay. Well, while we're working on that.
We repeat the Matthew
25, 14 through 29.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We good? Okay. All right, before we even get into investing, if you are investing and don't have any life insurance, you need to stop investing. Because the thing that I'm going to tell you right now is that the insurance plan will kind of secure, because investments are risky, and that there's no guarantee that you're going to make money off that. So with the life insurance, it's a permanent thing that you're going to have throughout your life. And the thing about it, you're giving me that luckier thing, is that it kind of secures things for you.
Yeah.
So the money that you're spending on investing, you need to first get some life insurance to take care of your family. Who's married in here?
Married.
About almost 90%. So you need, who has children? You all need to have life insurance. And I'm going to recommend 5 to 10 times your salary. You can go to the next one. And I'm going to recommend term insurance. Whole life, variable. We can stay away from those. Kind of like run from them. Insurance is to be for your family, not an investment. Some people will say, well, I can make 5% the money that I'm putting in my variable life insurance, but term insurance, that's what you need to have. And we talked about Matthew 25, 14 through 29. And we talked about the three servants who, two of them doubled their money for their master and one didn't. And the thing about it also, Neil said it, you know, it talked about that we're not doing what we're supposed to do as far as our money is concerned. But it also talks about faithfulness, too. I mean, what God has given you, we need to take that and be good stewards about it. And what I'm trying to say is that, you know, we just can't, you know, be on this earth and not do the right thing. He has told us to be debt-free. He's told us to invest. So those are the things that we need to be doing for our families and ourselves. We're going to talk about some investment strategies. If someone can read that for me real quickly, please.
Steady plotting brings prosperity. Hasty speculation brings poverty.
That was good.
Proverbs
21:5. That was quick. I like that. Steady plotting. There's no get-rich schemes out here. The lottery's not going to get you rich. It may get you poor, but the thing about it, investing is doing it on a monthly basis, weekly basis. That's how you, what we call dollar cost averaging, where you invest money on a monthly basis. I mean, we're going to talk about stocks, bonds, and everything else, but the thing about it, it has to be consistent, and it has to be done on a regular basis. If someone was telling me that they're going to get into the stock market right now, I would say you need to do some research. You need to be educated. You need to know what you're doing. Hasty speculation is something like if I come to Neil and say, hey, I got this great idea that we can get rich from, and he says yes, you know, and then he says, Ken, what happened to my money? And I just walk away. So, and we wouldn't be friends anymore. You know. Diversity. We hear that word a lot, especially in corporate America. In today's society, diversity is probably one of the most important things as far as investments is concerned. Remember we talked about the three servants who had the bags of gold? Can someone read Ecclesiastes 11:2 for me? Real quick.
Divide your portion to 7 or even 8, for you do not know what misfortune may occur. Okay.
The three servants, one got 5 bags, the other got 2, and the other one got 1. That comes up to what? 8? So the Bible's telling you even how to have an investment strategy. That's the point I'm trying to make to you. This is not rocket science. This is biblical. So, God, I mean, we all stand on God's works, correct?
Yep.
So, and I'm going to say diversity is that you may want to have some stocks, maybe you want to have some bonds, may have some mutual funds, investment properties. It has to be a mixture because the thing about it is that one sector may go down or lose money. But if you have some other investments, they may be up at that time. So in the bad economy, there's some stocks, there's some bonds that may do well, and there's some that may not. I'll give you a perfect example. A stock that would do well in the bad economy would probably be banks right now. And why I say that is because banks are going to find a way to get fees from consumers like you and me in the bad economy. Or a credit card, like Capital One, in a bad economy, people have lost their jobs. What they're going to do is going to charge you more interest on your money or charge you fees. And their fees are going to be probably, I'm going to throw out something, about almost 60% of their revenue. So in the bad economy, there are some stocks that do well. You can get that one from Kenton.
The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel.
For me, I'm just saying, for me, this is probably the most important thing, is that when you're looking at investments, you need to seek some type of counsel. I'm not talking about your brother-in-law who just, you know, read a book or anything like that. That's a good thing. Don't get me wrong. I'm talking about, you know, someone who's been in the business, someone who knows what he's talking about, and someone that you can trust. Financial advisor. There's a big thing going on right now. Should I talk to a financial advisor or should I talk to a financial planner? They're both the same type of people. They do the same thing. A financial advisor will say, you know, I'm not looking to sell a person any products. I'm just looking to give him the best investments. I'm going to say this to you. If you, anybody who uses a financial planner or advisor, I should see some more hands going up. Come on, y'all killing me today.
It's hard to find one that's not trying to sell you something.
Well, they're going to have to sell you something. You want to buy something?
I'll pay for their services, but I don't want to buy their product.
Okay.
Because it's like buying your drugs from your doctor.
Okay.
He's going to have you on everything.
We're going to move on from that.
No offense, there ain't doctors in the office.
But the thing about it is that with a financial advisor planner, I mean, they do give you some type of direction to go into. But the thing about it, the first thing they should be asking you is that, what is your goal? You should come in there and tell them, this is my goal, this is what I want to do. I'm investing so I can buy a business, I'm investing to take care of my family, things like that. So it shouldn't be a matter of, you know, them telling you, you should be telling them what you're trying to do. And then the other thing is that, remember the movie Philadelphia?
Yes.
When Denzel said that, explain it to me like I'm a 2-year-old, that's what your financial advisor should be doing. He should be explaining to you exactly what's going on. Because it's your money, right? Who has your best interest? Exactly. So the thing about it is that you need to know what's going on. And then the other thing that he needs to ask you about is risk. What's your risk tolerance? I'm just speaking for me. My risk tolerance on a scale of 1 to 10 is about a 6. And he needs to know that, because if he puts you in an investment that, let's just say you invest, I'm throwing out a number, $1,000, and now it's only worth $10, you're going to be pretty mad, right? But if you told him that your risk tolerance was, you know, let's just say a 1, you're, you know, very conservative, he should put you in something conservative, because that's your tolerance. That's what you can take. And then I want you guys to write this down right here. This is very important. WWSCC.gov. This will give you all the information that you need to know about your financial planner, financial advisor. You can go on that website. It will tell you the courses he's taken, the degrees that he has, if he's certified, whatever the case may be. Anybody who what?
Primerica, because of the financial side, or try to educate.
I'd be smiling and say, what's wrong with Primerica?
I would suggest them. This is what I'm going to tell you. If you're looking for a financial advisor, start with your bank. I mean, they have financial advisors, they have financial planners. That's the best way to start. And you need to have some type of relationship with your bank. Start with them. Because the thing about it is that, I mean, they kind of know what you have as far as accounts are concerned. They have some type of, you know, knowledge about you. So, remember I said all investment securities some type of risk? So, let's just say that I know there's some people who have investment property in here. Raise your hand. I like to see that. I like to see more hands up. But let's just say that you buy a property, and say the property, for whatever reason, has a flood or whatever the case may be, and it has to be raised. You've lost your money, right? Okay. So, I mean, there's all types of risks with all types of investments. So, let's just say you buy stock in, I'm not saying that to do this now, I'm saying if you do, you buy stock in Nike. Let's just say you buy it at $100 a share. Say it goes down to about $10 a share. You done lost a lot of money, right? So, all investments have risk. Bonds, too. Buy a bond for $1,000. You try to cash it in, it's only worth half of it. So all investments have some type of risk. And we talked about don't make any investments if you don't understand. And the reason why I have this picture up here of Kareem is because of Neil. No, I'm just kidding. I will say Kareem is probably, besides Michael Jordan, probably the second best player to ever play the game. The reason why he stayed in the game so long, because he made bad investments. I've read his first book and the second book. In the second book, he says that, you know, he just, you know, let his advisor do everything. He didn't have any knowledge of what was going on, if he was losing money or making money. And that's why I say that have them tell you specifically what's going on.
One of the things that kind of helped me and my family was we had a personal relationship with our advisor. And
brother-in-law?
No,
I'm just kidding.
it was through my job.
Okay.
But then we separated my job stuff like a 403B, and then we went into our personal business and then our personal family. It's kind of three different things. Because you got a job, you know, you're working, you want a little retirement or whatever. Then you got your own business, that's another entity. And then you got your personal, like you talked about, life insurance.
Right.
You know, at first, it was just me and my wife with life insurance. But then I thought, if my child died, or something should happen, how am I covered?
Thank you.
Their funeral. How am I covered expenses? So I talked to him. He sat down, he said, I'm going to tell you a story. And he shared a story about, and I'm not going to go into it, but a child had died. And a man just got life insurance through a company, and he was able to pay for his full coverage. Now, I got four kids, one in the belly. And so I got them all covered, except for one in the belly yet. I'm going to put that one on there. But it's so important. It's a little extra money. But I'm looking at the long haul and the big picture. If something should happen, I wouldn't have it.
Let me tell you a story. In the news, let's just say around December, there was a young lady who unfortunately got shot by a young man in the alleyway. Her family did not have insurance on her. So they had to kind of get donations, have people, you know, give money and things like that. I think that's probably one of the worst situations you can be in, unfortunately. And I'm going to say this, is that with children, you take out a rider on them as far as insurance is concerned. You take it out as soon as they get born. As soon as you cut in the cord, talk to your insurance and say, I need a rider on my son or daughter. And the thing about it is that I see so many times that family they're not insured properly, or they don't have insurance at all. That's the worst thing that you can do to your family. That's why I say, if you're investing and you don't have any insurance, earlier that we talked about, you got it backwards. The insurance needs to be first, and then comes the investing. We straight on that? Okay. We're going to talk briefly, basically, about 401s, stocks and bonds, some IRAs, and real estate. 401k, who's working right now? Keep your hand up. who has talked to their advisor for the 401k in the past year? You got three hands up. That's good. 3 out of 20. That's Let me say this. When you get your statement in the mail about your 401k, and it's taking a dip, is that you need to be on the phone talking to whoever your company has. They may have Fidelity. They may have Vanguard. I think another one, American General.
Century.
I mean, it just depends on who they're using. Call them. That's what they're there for. And the thing about with 401ks, I'm going to say this. You need to do it, but you need to do it in the right way. Is that, let's just say at 5% the company is going to match, you need to be investing at least 5% to get the company match. I work for AT&T. I think the matching is at 6. At 6%, I'm putting in 6%. But the kicker part in this is that I don't just invest my money in the AT&T stock. Has anybody heard of Enron? Okay. That's what any company can go down, just like that, by cooking the books. So we talk about diversity, right? Is that in your 401k, you need to have, it needs to be diverse and just can't be in one area. Right. I split mine up about 4 or 5 ways. Some international, small caps, mid caps, stocks. So I don't care. If you don't get anything out of this session, learn the word diversity. Diversification. Stocks and bonds. I'm not going to recommend anything. I'm going to tell you what I do. My portfolio is about 60 stock, 40 bonds. On stocks, you probably, the rate of return on the stock is probably between, let's just say, 8 and 15%. Bonds, you're looking at about a rate of return of between 2 and 5%. The thing that I don't do, I don't buy individual stocks. I use the mutual funds to do that, put in the mutual fund. That's just what I do. What you guys do, I mean, is what you feel comfortable in doing. But that's just what I do. I'm not trying to recommend that you do what I do. Is that you have to have, by having your own strategy. That's what I'm saying. A Roth IRA, probably one of the... I have one for myself and my wife. I think it's a great investment because the thing about it is after-tax income. So when I retire, is that I don't have to pay any taxes on this. Bless you. And the traditional IRA is pre-tax. So you can put that money in a traditional IRA, have it pre-tax, but you do have to pay taxes once you start drawing on. Real estate, one of my favorites. I love real estate. Great time to buy real estate. Let me see. I have about 4 properties right now. Looking to buy another one. I understand that the housing boom happened. Some people, let's just say, wasn't educated, I'll put it that way, on what they were doing. And then there were some people out there just... Yeah, exactly. Doing whatever to the consumer and trying to make some money. I think if you're going to get into real estate, you have to treat it as a business. Not a side thing. It has to be treated as a business because it is an investment. And the thing about it, I'll say this. Real estate for me is a long haul. It's not, you know, I buy a property, I flip it, you know, buy another property. Yeah, you can do that. But the thing about it is that I like rental income. So every month when my tenants, you know, pay me their money, as far as a check or cash, I'm happy camping. So, I mean, those are just some basic investing. I mean, there's mutual funds. I mean, you can do a mutual fund for at minimum $25 a month. Or, you know, a Roth, you can do a Roth for $25 a month. Remember I said, you know, It's just doing it on a consistent basis. And the thing that I'm going to recommend to you guys is that please find someone who you can trust as far as financial advisor, financial planner. I talk to my financial planner twice a year. We have a good relationship. We talk more about other things than what I'm doing because he knows what I'm looking for and I know what he's going to do for me. And if he doesn't, I just move on to somebody else. You have to find someone who can help you in this world of finance. The reason why I'm saying that is that because no one knows everything about investing or finance. No one does. They can say they do, but they don't. Because it's just so much out there. You had a question?
Yeah, I was going to ask. My son is 2 months old, and I was just recently thinking about just putting like $25 a week in the bank just keep doing it out of my check or whatever. Now, what you're saying to put it, or you're saying like the Roth IRA or mutual fund, like what's a good idea just for, I'm just basically thinking of like way down the line, because he's probably not going to touch it till he's 18 or whatever, but something like a vehicle, an investment vehicle like that, that could be used for, I mean, I know there's so many things out there they say for kids, but what's something,
you know, I'm not going to make a recommendation. His question was, what do you do for, you know, your child until they're 18? I'm going to give you, if I was in that situation, I would do a college fund. You can invest $25, $50, $100 a month in something like that. You mentioned about putting $25 in the bank. You ever heard of opportunity cost? Mm-hmm. Anybody heard of opportunity cost? Opportunity cost is doing the alternative of what you're doing right now. So let's just say we're going to go with this scenario that he puts $25 in the bank every month. Let's just say he put $25 a month in a Roth or a mutual fund. Which one do you think over the long haul until his son, right, mm-hmm, is 18 is going to give him his best return? That's opportunity cost. Doing the alternative of what you're doing. You have to look at the alternatives of what you're doing. If there's something else that you can do, I would do a college fund. You know, that's just me. I'm not saying that you. I'm not making any recommendations now. Don't hold me to it. Yes.
Now, for me, what I decided to do with my wife, just start them a bank account. And we just decided to put in every, you know, paycheck or whatever, and we did it that way. And that's just for me, you know.
Okay.
But what we decided to do, I chose Roth IRA because I figured that down the long haul, taxes might go up, different things might happen in the future. I figure that's done away with. I don't have to worry about paying no taxes if I desire to draw out.
Okay.
That's just me. You know,
great idea.
You know what I'm saying? That's just me.
Let me get him over here real quick.
What would happen to, like, CDs?
I have some CDs, too.
Because, you know, like, you're not going to get a big
fan. No, it's just basically with a CD, you're probably going to get maybe 1%. You know, I mean, but it's safe. But the thing about it with a CD is they're going to probably say, we want your money. We're going to hold your money for
a year.
Yeah. We're going to give you 1%. Let's just say that that money that they're holding for a year, I'm sorry, that let's just say you put in something else that you can make a better return. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that. I'm just saying look at all options. Don't, you know, there's money markets out there too. You know, I think CDs could be put as far as maybe holding cash that you may need at a later time, so it's secure, so you have that, like emergency fund. So, Kevin.
I was going to say that UW school system, they had you need to check, I don't know what it was, I know it was $1,000 when my kids were born. And you get it's like a bond that you buy, and that they guarantee your kid a college education by the time they get 18, but you got to get it when they're first born. So you check in with the UW system, it might be $1,000 or $2,000. So, but if they don't go to school, you lose that. But if you look at the scenario of putting $25 a week in over a period of 2 years, you put over $2,000 in anyway. But and if they do decide to go to UWM, that's a cost that you won't have over your head when they're 18.
Is it UW-Milwaukee or is it the
UW system?
UW system.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Go anywhere in Wisconsin, UW system.
Right, right. And then secondly, the other thing is that another form of investing or at least creating an equity is rather than taking that $25 to do that or whatever, you can take money if you have a high interest rate on your mortgage, you can take that extra money and apply it to your mortgage every month.
Good point.
So like you said, there's all kinds of ways.
There's all kinds of ways of investing. You had a question?
Well, my thing was I stopped making excuses.
I like this man right here.
The reason why I said that, because if you read that scripture, it talks about the one that had, he just made excuses. And I stopped making excuses. I stopped saying, well, I ain't got the money. Well, God provided me with whatever me and my wife have, he provided it for us. Amen. So that means I have to ask for wisdom, a financial advisor. What strategies can I make to make it profitable?
Being a good steward.
Right, so...
Can I sit down?
But we're learning, me and my wife, we're learning how to manage our money, like you talked about debt. You know, we made some bad choices, and we got caught in some debt. But we know the steps and the strategies to get out of it. We don't make excuses. Well, I ain't going to be able to pay because they ain't going to get their money. Or no, them dead excuses. So... We had to first get that character part right as far as being a man and woman of integrity. Okay, well, we owe. We borrowed it. We owe you. We're going to pay it. Amen. It's just those things that we overlook or make excuses about. Those are the things that God looks at in stewardship.
That is true.
And so I just wanted to throw that out there. That
did he go through our class?
I wish he did. He sound like he did, but let me say something. Let me follow up on what he just said, because I'm basically finished with my presentation. Is that the thing about it is that, let's look at it this way. I won't even answer it. If there's someone who's not employed, they're not receiving any income. But the thing about, if you're working on a daily basis, is that we have to pay bills, right? We have to pay rent, groceries, and things like that. What we do after that, that's kind of up to you. I mean, I know some guys who love cars. They just love them. I mean, they buy a car every year, whatever the case may be. That money that they're buying that car with, they can be investing in that. I mean, we all are going to make mistakes, you know, as far as our finances are concerned. It's just a matter of, you know, getting on the right track, getting in our minds, you know, setting the right motion as far as, you know, biblically, God has told me to do this, so I'm disobeying what he's telling me to do. So we need to get our mind straight. It's more mental than anything else. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I'm going to say this is that my friend Eric over here, we kind of lead the financial ministry. I mean, I talk to him on the basis where, hey, Eric, what do you think about this? I asked, you know, just to get his opinion. And he said, well, Ken, you know, if it was me, I wouldn't do that, or, you know, I think it's a good idea. Is that, you know, you have to share your ideas or what you're trying to do with people that you trust. It's not always about your financial planner or your advisor. It's people that you trust. And the thing about it, if he says, hey, Ken, I don't know anything about this, you know, he'll tell me that. Those are the types of things that you have to do in your life. When I bring up the brother-in-law thing, don't get me wrong, there's some people who are very financial sound and have integrity. But there are some people who just, you know, say things off the whim. So you know from what they're speaking if it's true or if they believe it or not or whatever the case may be. I mean, if I'm looking at buying a property, I talk to him about it and say, hey, what you think about this? He said, hey, Ken, I don't think you should do that. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that because he's looking out for my best interest. And now I know he is because he's a good friend of mine. But the thing about it is that I'm going to say this one other thing, and if you have any other questions, let me know, is that finances, it's not always about the dollars and cents. It's about our behavior and if we trust God. It's about our faithfulness, really. So that's the end of my presentation. Any other questions? We got about 7 minutes. Go ahead, Aaron.
I was going to say earlier you mentioned about, talked about counsel and seeking good counsel, and your recommendation at the time was a financial advisor or planner, which is good. I was sitting here somewhat disagreeing, but then you came full circle and came back to my point. You're someone who I would consider good counsel. My friend Kevin here is someone I also consider good counsel, and you're two very godly men, and I've admired some of the things that you've done. So those can be good counsel.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily have to be advisor.
Right.
But then he made the point about the advisor selling, but if you're seeking to buy, then yeah, then they should be able to sell. But again, then you talked about what is your risk tolerance, and that's something that I don't know everybody knows what their risk tolerance is. My first thing would be, I don't want to lose anything. But then my other thing would be, well, do I want a 1% return or do I want a 15% return?
Right.
Well, with either one of those returns, there is some measure
There's,
of risk. What they say, the most secure thing is what, a U.S. Treasury bond, but it has a lower interest rate.
Right.
And you can invest in penny stock, something that may or may not take off, and then there's another set of risks. That's where the tolerance comes in, how much you want to really get out of it. And then you're not betting or gambling or investing your bread money. Investing comes after your bread money.
And then, let me just follow up a little bit on that, is that the thing about it is that your risk tolerance, like Eric said, you know, you don't want to lose any money. But with any investment, there's some risk. There's some risk in not doing an investment.
Right.
So, for me, my risk tolerance is, like I said, 6. I mean, I can go all the way up to 8, but I, you know, that's just a little. My wife would just cringe, you know. And Eric, don't you tell her. But my wife, she's like a 2. You know, she's not very risky. She's very conservative. You know. But the thing about, like Eric said, you do need to know your risk tolerance. You have to. I mean, because the thing about it is that, you know, I want to say about, let's say 2.5 years ago, my wife, she got a statement from her 401k. She looked at it, she said, I'm taking my money all out. I looked at her, yeah, what about all the money that you made?
Right.
And then the thing about it is that I said, well, if that's what you want to do, I said, what you need to do, every 401k has, well, you mentioned a CD.
Guarantee
interest, where you get a little interest. I mean, you're not going to, you know. She said, well, how much I'm going to make? I said, you're going to get probably about 1.5%. She said, that's all?
Right.
I'm looking at her, yeah, that's all.
Can I make one other comment?
Sure.
Right quick? And he was hitting on it, too. You've talked a lot of nuts and bolts, is what I call them. And in our financial class, that's not where it starts. That's the after part. You have to start with an understanding of God's principles in investing and in managing and being a steward. With all of these things, it starts with prayer. First, seek God's wisdom, and then from that, He will enlighten you. He'll put good people in your life, and those sorts of things.
And that's kind of the direction I was going to. Now, I'm a high risk. And reason why...
Because it's a brother-in-law?
Now, my financial advisor was through Northwestern Mutual.
Great company.
Good company.
And I listen to what he's saying. I hear what he's saying. I'm looking at my family. Then I'm also putting everything in God's provision.
Okay.
I don't base my life how much money I make or how much investment I make. I'm making on my provider. So I'm a high risk because I'm trusting God that, okay, you can either I can lose it or it'll go up. But I looked at my interest rate, like it says, mine's between 8 and 13.5. It's usually on the higher end. So when I'm looking at my statement, I'm thinking, wow. Now, I can look at it one day and it can be like, whoa. But I'm trusting that God is going to make the provisions for the future, for my family, for the kingdom, and the kingdom of God, to advance his kingdom. So I'm not looking that the devil going to snatch it away. I'm looking at God's going to continually increase if I stay faithful, you know, committed to what he's called me to do, and so forth. So I'm more of a trust and faith factor more than fear and doubt. So that's kind of like what I'm saying, your mindset. The loss will come. Count that in. That's part of the package. But I look at with God, it works out for our good. Okay. All things work together for good to those that love. So that's how I see it.
Yeah,
there have been some comments about money depreciating and increasing and what have you. And I think one of the things we need to take our minds off of is the issue of depreciation. If you have an investment in maybe some stock or the other, with all organizations, all ventures, you're going to have the slopes, the ups and downs. The key thing is to hold as long as you can. Everything goes in cycles. One of the biggest mistakes investors do is when you see it start to go down, you start to pull out that money and what have you. Don't do that. It's the biggest mistake we mostly make. So when you see it go down, yeah, it goes down. Because again, it's a cycle. Hold as long as you can. And that was a very big nugget that Eric mentioned about the fact that monies that you want to invest in this risk ventures are not the ones for your bread and butter. They should be the extras you have, the ones you put aside for that, the ones that you're willing to risk. Always differentiate between the money to pay the everyday bills versus the one you want to put into the risk. I'm a high-risk investor. If it's, I'm more like the 10. I want to make the quick money. I want the 100% return. Seriously, investing options, stock. I do the high-risk investments. But the key thing is, this is money that I'm like thinking, oh, well, if it goes, it goes. You know what? I might as well have gone and spun some dice in a casino. Go well. But if you don't have that kind of mind or heart, don't do it. But always remember, the money you're going to spend for that kind of thing has to be the one that you are willing to risk into it.
That's a great point. Go ahead.
How does tithes go into any profit that you make, or is it strictly the money that comes in you should give back to God's kingdom, your church, where does tithing fall?
For me, I'm just speaking for me. I can't speak for everybody else. Is that all the income that I receive from my job, income properties, I tithe off of that.
So
right. Let me say something else. As far as my investments are concerned, I reinvest all my dividends that I receive from my investments. I reinvest that back into the investment. So I don't receive any income for that. So any income, anything that's income-wise, I tied off of that, that I receive. So,
let me get right. So when you start withdrawing that investment income, then you'll tie it off?
Then I will tie it off of that, yes.
And that's the same way with me. Like I said, I'm a high risk. So when I tied an offering, I don't...
Is that your brother? Let me stop.
I'm saying this because it goes back to your faith again.
Right.
My tithes and offering has nothing to do with bills and my investments on earth. I'm not thinking that way. That tithes and offerings is God's. Mm-hmm. And so I trust that when I tithe an offering, there's a return. It might be in health, it might be whatever. But the point is, my tithes and offering has nothing to do with my earthly bills or my investments I want to make, you know, for my personal life or family. So I don't include that with that area.
Okay. I'm going to close this right here.
I was just going to say that. I think I understand, because the way I look at it, and I guess there's two ways you can look at it. Your tithing should be a part, is just as much as important as your bill. So I look at it as a bill, but it's not a bill to a man. It's giving back to God. So when I do my budget, that's in there.
your tithes have to be part of that.
Let me say this. I appreciate you guys coming out. I hope you get something out of this workshop. I hope it was, you know, beneficial for you. We need to get out of here so the next person that's giving their workshop can come in. So you guys have a great day. All right. Thanks a lot for coming.
The one that I got a little life insurance, 5 to 10 times
your salary,
and then term insurance, I wrote one. Term insurance, I'm not. What is term insurance?
Term insurance was, is it for terms, either like maybe a 10-year term, 20-year term. You want to get a 30-year term. There's all types of terms. You can get 15, but you want to do 30.
So whatever you invest is going to stay locked in for that.
Right. Whatever you, whatever you're, let's just say you buy term insurance. Let's just say you got $500,000 of term insurance. Basically, you're paying, let's just say $100 a month. It's going to be $100 a month until that term runs out.
Okay.
So you want to get term. Because variable life.
So which is when you said run?
Oh, variable life.
Oh, variable life.
Yeah, you want to run.
Okay, so term is the good one.
Right, you want to get term insurance.
That's wrong.
Go ahead, Anna. I'm going to step out. I mean, if you guys got some questions, let me start.
Ken, how'd it go?
It went pretty good. I had to change that project. The other one was dying.
Oh.
They got Benji.
Benji's fine.
Okay.
All right. Benji, I know you are.
Yeah. Turkey or Benji? So.
I'm back to back, and then I'm going to...
I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to bring it up to the room.
I'll take it, Turkey. Hopefully this will work without a glitch.
All right.
But you never know. It doesn't always work as planned, right?
Best laid plans.
Yes, it is. Gentlemen, I was talking to, they were telling me how they do all wireless presentations, like in that main room, they have that overhead projector.
Right.
And they all, you can all wirelessly come right into a, that's neat.
Yeah. But that's the issue, you got to be in there usually. Or typically there's a, I think you got to log in somehow.
Last message was rather timely in
what's that?
Last message was rather timely by Ken in this day and age, right?
Oh yeah. Definitely. I'm
still waiting for them to start grabbing my pension and my retirement and times have a they haven't changed, they are changing.
Are you out of Madison?
I actually work out of the Milwaukee office.
No, okay. I'm with MPD, so.
I'm sorry?
I'm with MPD.
Oh, very good.
So, all right. I'm with them since so.
I know Jacob Doreen, and she works in New York, right? And then McEwen.
Yeah, great people.
Doreen. Sean Lutz, and one other guy. Rick McGowan.
Yeah.
McGowan, yeah, too. Yeah. They confused McEwen.
You got McKee, and you got McGowan.
Okay,
all right,
give me a call.
You want this?
Sure. You Alex?
Yes, I'm Alex.
Alex and Mike. Nice to meet you. Pleasure. We got action. It's good.
Are you going to be back here?
Pardon?
Will you be at the...
No, I'll go up front.
Okay. Do you need a help? Do you run the PowerPoint?
I got a clicker. So
okay.